We've looked at the Reformation in different lands. We haven't come to England yet, but we're going to sort of take us, now turn our attention to the radical reformers, those who went farther than Luther and Calvin and Zwingli, and others. Look, I indicated the distinction, the bottom of page 56, between the radicals and the Luther main, and the mainstream Luther-Calvinian movement, Lutheran-Calvinian movement. Whereas the Lutherans and Calvinists thought of the because we're going to see next quarter that the early Restoration Fathers, originally when they began, the Campbells, for instance, began thinking about the proposition set forth in the Declaration and Address. When Thomas Campbell wrote the Declaration and Address, he thought of himself in the same way that Luther and Calvin thought of themselves, as simply reforming the continuing church. However, as they continued to study the scriptures, they began to think the reformers became restorers. They began to be forced to think of themselves not as reforming an existing church, but restoring a lost church. Y'all see the difference? And many in our movement today are especially this book of Leroy Garrett's, Stone Camel Movement, which gains its wide popularity with such bad historiography. He has manipulated the data to try to show that we should never have had many Restoration Movement, only a Reformation. The Restoration Movement was a mistake. That's what's taught in the manual. That's what's taught in several of our schools, especially our textbooks being used. The Restoration Movement fundamentally was a mistake. We should never have been anything but a Reformation Movement. A reforming, continuing church, not restoring a lost church. And it's bad history because I'm saying, well, are you with me? The Restoration Fathers started out because they did not realize how radical, that is, they had no idea how radical a thing it would be to take the Bible only. When they said, we're going to take the Bible only, they had no idea where it would lead them. They found out that it led them from being reformers to restorers.
Justification under the law. So they went back and revived the old code of Justinians. centuries before, from the 4th century, the old code of Justinian, which was against Donatus. Remember that last quarter? The Donatus said that you have to baptize, if a person is a Christian and under persecution, when the government persecuted them, their own government, and they denied the faith, in order to come back into the church, they had to be rebaptized. And the mainline church, supported by the Emperor Justinian, denied that and said, if you baptize anybody again, you break the law, punishable by death. Understand? Against these more conservative Donatists. Had nothing to do with the Anabaptist issue. Well, it's a completely separate issue. With the Donatists, the question is, do you rebaptize a one who denied the faith under pressure of persecution? But because the old code of Justinian did forbid rebaptism for that reason, as a legal pretext, so they could give some kind of legal justification for what they were doing to these people, the Zwinglians in Zurich, they revived this old code of Justinian against rebaptizing and applied it to these people, but notice, they were rebaptizing for a different reason. In the first case, the Donatists were rebaptizing because people gave up under persecution, denied the faith. These are rebaptized, they didn't believe in infant baptism. But because they were just, and when the code of Justinian was leveled against them for baptizing again, that's when they became known as the Anabaptists, those who baptized again. Now, what was the origin? Now, by the way, we're going to say this. The Anabaptist is a broad term covering a whole lot of people, covering many different groups. Now listen to me, many different groups who talk many different doctrines. When we say Anabaptist, learn this. When we say Anabaptist, we do not mean one group with one set of leaders teaching one doctrine. We mean many groups, many people teaching all kinds of doctrines. Although the origin is uncertain, it often is held to begin in Zurich, where the Zwinglians were. The two important leaders are Conrad Grebel and Felix Mann, or Monk, depending on how his name is transliterated. They broke off from Zwingli. Zwingli was too conservative. You see, they say you're going to take sola scriptura, let's take sola scriptura. Let's take the Bible. Much like the the American Restoration Movement. Many parallels. Then, too much on the city council, not enough on the Bible. He wanted the state to support the church, and the church to include all within the state. Now here's the key element in Anabaptist. You see, the key element is the idea of the gathered church. Very important question in this age. Is the church coextensive with the state? What does that mean? Every citizen a Christian, unless he's a Jew or a heretic, you burn the heretics.
Get that?
No, said the Anabaptist. The church is a called out group, a group gathered from within the state. The church and the state are not coextensive. Ah, that's real problems now. Got that? A gathered church from the state. How would you vote? Would you agree with the Anabaptist? Yeah, I think I would. On that principle. He rejected infant baptism, Grebel did. Everybody was automatically baptized. Everybody was automatically baptized as an infant, became a member of the church. Infant baptism and the state church were a part of the same systems. Really, so that's one of the reasons they were, listen to me, one of the reasons why the Zwinglians were so heated up about the Anabaptists, because infant baptism was more than a theological issue, it was a political. What are you saying about that person? You were never baptized. If they were never baptized, what does that say about the state church? That's right. It's not the state church. And keep in mind that most people
understood, or at least believed, that if the state church fell, the state would fall. So what ultimately was at stake within the baptism was not some theological nicety. What was at stake, listen to me, in the minds of the reformers, not the radicals, in their minds of the city council of Missouri, for instance, what was in their mind was this: if this goes on, the state will fall. Were they right? Well, yeah, they said they were right. If you have a state church, and it's holding sort of everything together, if enough people deny it, it will fall apart. What happened in Germany? At least fall apart in some sense. You see that? Well, the city council held a debate, Zwingli against the Anabaptists, against Grebel and Manx, and they declared that Zwingli won, whether they did or not. So they, in 1525, they ordered Grebel and Mann to cease their agitation on pain of being expelled from the canton. And so they left, and they spread their ideas elsewhere. After a while, they returned to Zurich, were arrested, sentenced to prison, and a diet of bread and water, allowed no visitors. And it was while they were in prison that they passed this law, based on the Code of Justinian, that rebaptism was punishable by death, by drowning. Why by drowning? Yeah, you see the irony here? Because now, when the Anabaptists started out, when they baptized adults, they sprinkled poured water on them. But they continued to study the Bible, and they realized that baptism was now by immersion. And so they were now beginning to immerse adults. And so they said, beliefs of the Anabaptists. There were the evangelicals. This was the main body, the moderates, sometimes called the Swiss Brethren. What was their attitude toward the Bible? Well, one that we would agree with, I think. The Bible is a sole authority and basis for life and spirituality. Luther saw the Bible as one means of grace. The sacraments were other means of grace. The church was a means of grace. But only the Bible was a means of grace, according to the Anabaptists. They said we must obey the Bible very strictly. What was the attitude toward the church? Only members of the church are conscious believers. That is, babies cannot be members. Only conscious believers are to be baptized by immersion. Now, they were not baptized to save them. Don't get that. Don't misunderstand that. Not to become Christians, because they were Christians. Local autonomy sounds like us, doesn't it? And they were the first ones to call for the separation of church and state. By that I mean no state church. Well, you see, that did threaten the social order. It was not. There were two spheres. He came to that after the boot shoe. Let the state do what it has to do to the peasants. The church is a separate issue. I'll talk about that. Calvin, there's no distinction. Remember the theocratic society of the elect? The Anabaptists, separation. The Christian must withdraw from the state. He will not seek to overthrow it, but neither will he participate directly in it. They really went too far. He will build a Christian society within the church and separate from the state. But keep in mind, now somebody tell me why the radical reformers might have taken such a radical view, such a complete separation.
That is, the Christian cannot participate in society. Well, what was society doing to them? What was the state doing to them? They started to put them to death. Anyway, their attitude toward the Christian life, the Anabaptists held, the essence of Christianity is discipleship. It was an ethical urge. That is, even their worst enemies never accused them of being hypocrites. The godly life. And keep in mind, even among the reformers, there was not much of the godly life. Listen to me. The Lutheran and the Calvinistic Reformation was primarily a Reformation of theology. Calvin tried to impose this strict code of morality in Geneva, but it was mainly an external thing. There was not this emphasis on piety, the devout life. And the Anabaptists stressed that. And by the way, one of the things often missing in the Restoration Movement is the way the Restoration Fathers really stress this as well. The pious life, the devout life. I'm reading now. Although the Anabaptist movement defines definition in theological terms, ideas were common but not universal. Among them were, now listen, these are ideas. But you must understand that the wars that they had known were wars where one where Catholic Germans fought Protestant Germans. Religious war. They were against wars. The refusal to take oaths. They still do that. Some of the Mennonites will not take an oath. They'll affirm. They'll not take an oath. Of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Although the Jehovah's Witnesses are not Anabaptists. They were against capital punishment. But keep in mind, in that day, capital punishment was very cruel, and it was for almost any crime. Children were put to death. You could put to death for just about anything. They participated in foot washing. Why? What did Jesus say? Wash one another's feet, so he did it. Strict morality and discipline. Look at this last statement I put here. Even their worst enemies admitted their success and sincerity in the quest. Somebody's living an ungodly life, you avoid them, shun them. They would put that, took it to the extreme, that if they have a member of the church who's getting out of line, they would simply shun them. They would not talk, will not talk to them. If he's bad enough to excommunicate them. But if he's not bad enough to excommunicate, they're shunned. Won't talk to them, not even his own wife or children. Forbidden to even talk, have any kind of communication with them. The practice of shunning served to keep the Anabaptists small. Surviving group of the Anabaptists, many of the Mennonite groups, well, there are many of them, wear the old clothes. And some of them, button hooks are, if you wear buttons, they're fancy, it's a luxury, it's worldly. Real Christians keep their clothes, they have hooks and eyes, not buttons. So there's a button, and there's the Anabaptist, so there's the anti-button. Button brother. We'll talk more about that later. Okay. And so first of all, there were the main group, the main mind. Then there were the extremists. And the extremists were the lunatic fringe. And they brought the whole movement into disrepute. Got that? There was this minority who were crazier and a bunch of bedbugs in some regards. Well, they were sincere. But they, what happened was that everybody defined the Anabaptist movement in terms of these lunatics, which was really not fair. I'll give some examples. Hans Hut. He taught the soon return of Jesus to establish the millennium, set the date. Al Lindsay would have liked him. Melchior Hoffman is an example. He was a millennialist. The Lord's going to come and set up his reign on earth. He declared himself to be Elijah. I like Herbert W. Armstrong. Prophesied he would be imprisoned in Strasbourg for 6 months, then Jesus would come. He was in prison for 10 years. The Lord, as he is wont to do, did not show up. His own death, and there he died. Jan of Matthes. John of Matthes and John of Leighton both claimed to be prophets. They claimed the millennium was near, that Jesus would set up the New Jerusalem at Münster. Where's the New Jerusalem? Jerusalem, London, for the British Israelites, Independence, Missouri, according to the Mormons. I was going to set up New Jerusalem somewhere. They set the exact date. Their followers gathered in huge numbers. They took over the town. Matthes taught that the millennium would be brought in by force. So his followers seized control of the town, introduced communal system, community of goods. Most of them didn't have anything, so they were glad to share the goods of those who did have, the townspeople. They included, they shared everything, including marriage partners. Although some Pentecostal groups do that. Some of the old Mountain Assembly Pentecostal groups, spiritual wives, spiritual marriages, and share wives. They taught plural marriages, polygamous, polyandrous, many one wife, one husband. Well, Anthony, this was a scandal. Ah, you see, the German people said, that's what Anabaptists are like. You understand? Which was not really true. It was just a bunch of nuts. Their leader, and so the Protestant forces got up an army, stormed Münster, took the town back from the Anabaptists. The leaders were cruelly tortured, killed, their bodies placed in iron baskets, hung from a church tower where they remained until 1881. Do you realize that in Münster, some of the bodies of these Anabaptists, these iron baskets, were hung from the church tower? But they were there until after the American Civil War. 1881, almost the turn of the century. Still there. Pretty ripe by then. Johann von Battenberg, he rallied some of the extremists who escaped from Münster. They taught polygamy and continued the spirit of Münster. Davis Joris is an outstanding fanatic. He taught the Messiah was that he was the Messiah of a better kingdom, and that the citizens were elevated spiritually, no longer bound by ordinary laws or morality. That's an old theme. You can sleep around and drink, whatever you want to do. Why? Because you're such, through the Holy Spirit, you can achieve this high. Sound like holiness theology, doesn't it? So what do we have? We had the mainstream, it was very divisive. We have the lunatic fringe, which brought the whole movement into disrepute. And this brought on persecution. While the main body of the Anabaptists called for toleration and persecuted no one, they got that, the main body persecuted everyone. Persecuted the Anabaptists, Roman Catholic, Reformed, and Lutheran. That's the only thing that the Roman Catholics, the Lutherans, and the Reformed people agreed on. You got to kill the Anabaptists. Why? They're threatening the social order, the state church, the goodness around them. Look what they did at Münster. I give examples. Michael Sattler, leader of the Swiss Brethren, after the deaths of Grebel and Mann, was sentenced to death in Rottenburg. Between the representatives of the Imperial Majesty and Michael Sattler, judgment is passed that Michael Sattler shall be delivered to the executioner, shall firstly cut out his tongue. They shall throw him on a cart with red hot, and with red hot tongs tear pieces out of his body twice. On the way to the place of execution, make use of the tongs five times more in like manners.
they would take tongs and heat them in a hearth that were red hot, and then just clamp them and rip out parts of the body. You can guess what parts they would select. Thereupon they shall burn his body to ashes as an arch heretic. Burn him alive. That's pretty cruel, isn't it? Yes.
What was their impression of, what, in your opinion, you can't say that, but can you tell me how you think they perceived Jesus or God as a military God of some sort?
Who, the Anabaptists?
No, the Lutheran, the
sovereignty. He was king, and that really what they did to the Anabaptists had nothing to do with their conception of God.
It was political.
No, well, you see, what do you do to somebody whose doctrine sends people to hell for eternity and destroys the state, creates chaos, lets the enemies come in? It's the worst possible. Because they considered, if they were put, that is, given their assumptions about theology, the Anabaptists were the worst possible criminals imaginable. See, it's one thing for a criminal to threaten the state. It's something else for a heretic to threaten the soul for eternity. It's something else for somebody to do both. You see, the Roman Catholic princes, they were trying to stop the movement, and they basically did. That's one of the justifications for torture. Public, you know, it's a deterrent, and it is.
Yeah.
There was a lot to be said for public hanging to some of these child murderers, of these horrible criminals. Of course, we're too civilized to do that, but it was sure getting everybody's attention. You know, there's this myth. If you're interested in this, American liberals say we shouldn't execute criminals because it's not a deterrent. Well, whether it is a deterrent or not has nothing to do with anything. If it deters no one, the state still has a responsibility for justice. So the fact does not mean we shouldn't have capital punishment. That's theoretically understand. Because the responsibility of the state is for justice, whether it deters anybody else or not.
How can they say it's not a deterrent?
Well, they said they try to say it isn't, but the problem is, if you get a guy, it can't be a deterrent, you get a guy who commits a crime and 9 years later, after 50 or 60 court trials, not that many, 13 or 14 or 15 or 20 court trials, then he finally is executed. And so fewer are executed. The chance of being executed for murder, the chance of being, if you kill somebody, your mathematical chance of being executed are about 1 in 10,000. So it's really not a deterrent. But if anybody says it's not a deterrent, you know, the punishment like that, public punishment, is not a deterrent. You ought to go to Cairo, Egypt. It's a huge city. And you're safer on the streets of Cairo at night than you are in Orlando. Commit murder, you get one trial, you get one appeal, and you're usually put to death within a month. The public hanged. So your chance, if you get caught for murder, your chances of dying for it are very good, and very quick, and very ugly. And they have much drug problem in Cairo, you know why? Get caught for drugs, any drugs, which is a Muslim society. You know what it is? 25 years hard labor. Automatic, no appeal, no parole, 25 years of hard labor. Suppose anybody caught with drugs would get 25 years of hard on a rock pile.